You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio at RadioAryan.com. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. The date today is the 29th of January 2016. As always today, I am joined by my co-host, the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Mr. Dennis Wise. But we are also pleased to welcome today a caller from the chat room. We have two main subjects that we're going to go over. First off, we're going to have Messerschmitt, who is the caller from the chat room, who's going to talk a little bit about one of his favourite German war heroes. And after that, we've also got some fantastic good news. Dennis's documentary, Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, is going to be aired on television tomorrow. But we'll talk about that a little bit more as we get into the podcast. First off, I'd better greet Dennis. How are you doing today, Dennis?
I'm deep down buried in the bunker, being as a TV show going out tomorrow. I'm fine.
Preparing to get shot at. And how are you doing, Messerschmitt?
I'm fine, thank you.
Well, that's good to hear. Now, Schmidt, I suppose, I think we'd better call you for short. Schmidt is a Swiss German. And I believe you wanted to talk about Hans Ulrich Rudel, or at least bring some of his exploits to our attention. Is that right, Schmidt?
Yes, exactly. I wanted people to know about him because even though he has achieved such great things, he is virtually unknown to most people.
Well, yeah, I hadn't heard of him before. Had you heard of him before, Dennis?
No, but this is one of the reasons why in the Adolf Hitler documentary I did some pieces on the SS and various things like that, because they are looked on as an unknown quantity at the least, and a joke at the most over here in the Allied countries. So I needed to do a piece on them just to show the abilities and just the fact of how good the SS really were. So I'm not surprised there's other war heroes out there that we haven't really heard about. So this will be interesting.
Right. General Leon de Grelle was the main one, I think, that you covered, wasn't it? But I suppose you can't really go concentrate too much on these different people if you're trying to tell the story as well. So this is sort of going more into the background of it and showing just how much valor these German war heroes had. So if you want to continue a bit then, Schmidt, and let us know about some of these incredible things that he did.
Yes, okay. And I agree that in Dennis's documentary, The Greatest Story Never Told, this would not have fitted in well. It's more about the overall situation, the political moves and so on. But I think it's nonetheless a very interesting subject. So, I would like to start by saying that I'm not a historian or anything. I don't have any special knowledge. But I came across Rudel about 10 years ago and several other German pilots, because I was interested in aviation, military aviation. And I read about them, and back then I still thought, these were amazing people, but they just fought on the wrong side, because back then I wasn't educated myself and believed a lot of the propaganda. So maybe I should start by his amazing statistics. And by the way, these are undisputed facts. You can even look this up on Wikipedia. He has his own article there. So, if you can believe it, he personally destroyed 519 tanks, more than 800 other vehicles of all types, 150 artillery anti-tank or anti-aircraft positions, 4 armored trains, 1 battleship, 1 cruiser, 1 destroyer, and about 70 landing crafts.
Mm-hmm. Pretty incredible.
Well,
actually, Field Marshal Schörner said that Rudel alone replaces a whole division. So, and By the way, Stalin had actually put out a reward on his capture or his death or capture. That is also probably a bit unusual for the leader of an empire to single out an individual soldier and put out a reward on his head. I think it was 20,000 rubles, but I don't know what that would be in today's money.
Sure. No, so that's testimony to to his ability to have Stalin come on offer a reward for sure.
Was that a bit like Scorsini? They said he was the most dangerous man in Europe, didn't they?
Correct. Yeah. I did a slight piece on him as well. It wasn't that I couldn't do pieces on some of these German heroes, but it would have looked like I was being too biased, and people accused me of that as it was. So, but yeah, I mean, I appreciate there's. The only flyer that is really known over here is the Red Baron from World War One. That's probably because he didn't fight for Hitler in World War Two. So these Germans do have a history of tremendous pilots.
Well, that's it. We don't hear about them at all. Yeah. Sorry, go on, Schmidt.
Indeed. Actually, there is a Wikipedia page called the List of World War II Flying Aces. And if you start at this, at the top of the list, you see Erich Hartmann, Germany. And then follow, if you can believe it, page after page after page of Germans. Until finally, you get to a Finn from Finland. And then Germans again. And then there's one guy from Japan. And of course, this is never mentioned on any, these history channel shows about American pilots and so on.
Yeah, the mainstream, yeah. No, it's amazing for a country like Germany, what was so small, to have, you know, such a powerful air force and army, and the people obviously were skilled as well. So incredible, incredible, really.
I mean, you think when at the start of the war, they still had people on horseback, let alone an air force. You know, when they had all the weaponry taken off them after the First World War, I heard that when they first went into Poland, they still had people on horseback. So to go from that to an air force to having these trained pilots that, that's a really impressive list there, 519 tanks. Four armored trains, a battleship, 150 artillery mounts. I mean, that's pretty incredible feat to do. And we don't hear about these people at all. We hear about our fighter pilots in Britain who took out civilian targets, who just set fire to entire towns and cities and melted the people into the ground. Horrific war crimes, and we hear about them, and they're made out to be heroes, but we hear nothing of people like this that just took out loads of military targets with a phenomenal record. Do you know more about this fearless hero, Schmidt?
Yes, he was born in Silesia, Schlesien in German, which is now sadly officially part of Poland. And people who have watched Bloodstorm, the documentary, will know what happened to the people that lived in Silesia. And oh, by the way, Dennis, did you know that your documentary, The Greatest Story Never Told, is recommended on the official Hellstorm website? Oh, I'm sorry, I said Bloodstorm earlier. I meant Hellstorm.
Sure. No, I didn't know. That's good to know.
So he was born in Silesia, and he wanted to become a pilot. He actually wanted to become a fighter pilot, but he was actually not one of the best applicants, and so he had to be a bomber pilot, a dive bomber pilot in the Stuka, the Ju-87. Its official designation. And he was really considered a rather bad pilot and was not allowed to serve in frontline combat until a lot later. He joined, I believe, in 1939, the Luftwaffe, but it was only in 1941, I believe, that he actually saw combat. And his comrades didn't really think too well of his flying ability until he proved himself, and then from then on it was all fine.
It's amazing. You hear so many of these stories of people who started out in such a career and not really taken to it, and then all of a sudden someone just clicks and they go on beyond Call of Duty. I believe he lost his leg as well, didn't he, in one of these air crashes.
Yes, he did. He was actually shot down several times and wounded, very badly wounded. He was never shot down by an enemy aircraft, which is also amazing if you think about how these Stukas were shot down so many times over Britain, at the Battle of Britain. Mm-hmm. And towards the end, the Russian Air Force was numerically so overwhelming that it's really almost a miracle that he never was shot down. He was shot at a lot of times by Russian pilots, but they never got him.
Charmed life, yeah. Well, I actually saw a program the other day, and it mentioned about the Air Force coming over from Germany attacking Britain and the places you attack, like Devon, and it said actually that the bombing in London, which I found quite interesting, they only had enough fuel for 7 minutes, and so they would dump the load and then off they'd go. So they didn't really have long over London to actually bomb. Once that the German cities were being bombed, and obviously they came back with retaliation to bomb the London citizens.
The airplanes that flew with the German bombers were mostly the Messerschmitt 109, and they only really had a couple of minutes left over Great Britain to defend the bombers. And a lot of them didn't make it back over the channel. They had to water the airplane.
Right. Yeah, interesting, isn't it? I mean, today it won't be a problem at all, would it?
So he wasn't shot down at all then?
What do you say?
No, but actually he himself shot down several Russian fighters and bombers, if you can believe that, in his slow Stuka.
Yeah, well,
and at one point, he actually shot down a heavily armored EL-2 bomber by using two cannons attached to his Stuka. Most people will probably not know about that. They will only know the dive bomber version, but Rudel and engineers developed a cannon version of the Stuka, which was explicitly for tank hunting. And what they would do with these cannons, 37 millimeter cannons, was to attack the tanks from behind, because the armor was much too thick at the front and at the sides. Only at the backside could they penetrate with them. And he killed several hundred tanks with those cannons as well.
That's quite some. You have to be really good at hitting your target to think they're not just hit it from anywhere, but from a particular angle to get it on the back end of the tank. That's quite something when you're traveling
fired at the same time. Sorry for interrupting.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Making tea. I was thinking about these pilots when they got shot out. You know, these pilots would live afterwards because they were rebuilt. And today, when we see that Russian pilot and he gets shot down by the Muslims in Syria, and they're actually shooting at him after he's bailed out of his plane, after his plane's been hit, and the pilot bails out, they're literally shooting at him. You know, that was unheard of in World War II, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was in Poland because Hitler did a speech condemning Poland for the cruelty for when. The actual government actually gave an order to say that if any of the German pilots were captured, to be brutally murdered.
Horrific. You think these are honourable people that are just fighting to protect their country. You've defeated them. The plane's going down. There's no need to then kill the pilot. You know, you keep the pilot as a prisoner till the end of the war. And you give them the medical care and treat them as a human being. I mean, these were our white brothers, you know, that were brother fighting against brother in that war. You know, it's horrific to think.
The lesson learned from that war is there's no such thing as Geneva Conventions, because, certainly the Russians didn't abide by them, and certainly the Americans at the end didn't abide by him. So I think the brutal lesson learned is, you know, that there are no rules in war.
Well, how did he end up getting his leg shot off then?
I do not recall the exact incident. It was very late in the war. It was 1945. And I'm guessing he was shot down by flak. I would have to look that up, actually. And yeah, his leg had to be taken off. And still, he wanted to keep on flying, and he did. I think he had some kind of prosthesis to use the rudder pedals with his feet.
That's incredible. Yeah, keep going.
And Rudel, actually, he knew about what happened to German pilots that had to bail out over enemy territory in Russia. And that's another amazing aspect of his bravery. He would land his Stuka 6 times in enemy territory and pick up stranded German aircrews, cramped them all in his airplane, and took off again. And of course, he had no guarantee that he would be able to take off again. If you think about the muddy conditions and landing on a field and then taking back off.
That's
amazing, because they actually gouged out their eyes and cut off the genitals and all horrible things like that, which is incredible.
On the seventh attempt to do that, he actually could not take off again. And so there were four people on the ground, he and his rear gunner and the other two pilots, or pilot and rear gunner. And the Russians were running at them, and they just ran for their lives. And they came to the river Dniester and jumped into the ice-cold water, swam to the other side. And there, sadly, his rear gunner, Henschel, who was with him for hundreds of combat missions, he drowned. Rudel actually turned back from the shore and tried to save him, but he was just so out of breath, and the current was so strong, he couldn't rescue him. And maybe I could actually read a part of the autobiography, which actually deals with that very situation, if you don't mind.
Yeah, if you've got it there.
Sure.
So he says, quote, "I reached a spot where I just saw Henschel go down. I cannot dive. For a dive, I need to fill my lungs, but with the cold, I cannot get sufficient air. After several fruitless attempts, I just managed to get back to the bank. If I had succeeded in catching hold of Henschel, I should have remained with him in the Dniester. He was very heavy, and the strain would have been too much for almost anyone. Now I lie sprawled on the bank, limp, exhausted, and somewhere a deep-seated misery for my friend Henschel." And then he goes on, "A moment later we say a Pater Noster for our comrade, which is the Latin for the Christian prayer, Our Father, which also shows that they were all Christians, these pilots in this particular instance. And we all know how they just keep on trying to say the Nazis were anti-Christian. And
that's right.
Yeah.
That shows you just more proof that they are Christian. This is quite this is a really brave character. And this, I think, this is what white people used to be like. They would risk their lives for their comrades, and that's a Christian, that's a Christian thing. It says, "No greater love does man have than to lay down his life for his friends," and that's what battle and war is really about, is being prepared to lay down your life for your nation. It's just that it's so sad that it came about between white nations and other white nations. That is a really sad thing. But these tales of bravery and valor like this, and glory, really, you wouldn't have without actually, if there hadn't been a war, you wouldn't really have these tales. So it's sad that we've had the war, but, we have got these people that we can look up to and try to emulate ourselves to just risk everything to do what you can for your nation. I mean, that's a real fascist mindset, isn't it? Is, to do what you can for your nation, be prepared to die for your nation, all for one and one for all. And this is really quite a quite a hero that you found here, Schmidt. I'm really glad that you've come on today to tell us about him. Have you got more that you'd like to say about him?
Yes, what you just mentioned, I would like to add that he really did go, as the expression goes, above and beyond the call of duty, because even Adolf Hitler himself told him not to fly anymore. He ordered him to do so, but Rudel just said that he wouldn't accept the decoration. He was decorated with the highest German medal that there is, the Iron Cross, with the oak leaves and the swords and the diamonds. And Hitler then said, oh, well, then go on flying. But several times later, he still insisted on him not flying. And at one point, he just told Göring to tell him not to fly anymore, because he just couldn't, he didn't have the heart to tell Rudel not to fly anymore, because all he wanted to do was get back to the front line to help his comrades and, keep the Russians away from Germany as long as possible.
That's the same.
Well, it's very similar to Adolf Hitler in the First World War, when he wanted to rush back to the front after being injured and hospitalized. So, yeah, it must have pleased the Führer, I'm sure.
He must have seen himself in him, thinking back to that time. And when you think he's got a prosthetic as well, they had to obviously had to modify things so that the prosthetic could reach the pedals. But he must have been in quite some pain from that as well, having a missing limb. And this really just shows you what the will is capable of, what the mind is capable of, and what you can do when you put your mind to it. With the strength of will, you can overcome just about anything.
This type of story, when you're mentioning the Christian side of it as well, I'm convinced that the reason that they keep hammering the fact that the Nazis were not Christian is to bring down the European white race, or to help. It's just one section of a way of bringing them down, because the family is another way of the attack. And now they're saying, the Nazis were occultists, etc. And people, unbelievably, are falling for it, which I find incredible.
Yeah, you want strength from God as well as the strength from your will. I don't think we can't create ourselves. We have to be created by something, and you want that something to be wishing you well and trying to help you. You don't want to be fighting against that, or bad mouthing that, or being against that. You want to be doing what your creator wants you to do, and be in tune with the creator's will. Obviously, the creator's will was that Rudy did these things, and he helped him to achieve these the things that he did, and hit the targets that he did, and rescue the people that he did. It's a real shame that he wasn't able to rescue his rear gunner there, who was in the river with him. It's a shame he wasn't able to rescue him. Was that after, or I suppose that would have been before he had the prosthetic leg, when he was in the river rescuing his mate. Is that right, Schmidt?
Yes, that was, I would estimate, 43, probably. It was deep inside Russia still. And maybe I could also mention a part where he describes the encounters with the Russian population. So I will again read a small part here, quoting, "The Russians are dumbfounded by the many little things our soldiers carry on their person. They think the snapshots of our homes, our rooms, our girls are propaganda. It takes a very long time to convince them that they are genuine, that all Germans are not cannibals. They presently even doubt the truth of the indoctrinated catchword, Germanski nix kultura. In a few days' time, here as elsewhere, the Russians come and ask if they may be allowed to hang up again their icons and their crucifixes. Previously, under the Soviet regime, they have had to keep them hidden away because of the disapproval of a son, a daughter, or a commissar. That we raise no objection to their displaying them evidently impresses them. If you tell them that there are there are any amount of crucifixes and religious pictures to be seen in our country, they can hardly believe it. Hastily, they re-erect their holy niches and repeatedly assure us of their hope that this permission will not be revoked. They live in terror of their commissars, who keep the village under surveillance and spy on its inhabitants. This office is often undertaken by the village schoolmaster. End quote. So I believe this again shows how incredible the propaganda was in Soviet Russia. They thought of Germans as cannibals, and they could not believe that the Germans were Christians, and that in Germany at the time it was perfectly normal to have crucifixes and go to church and all that.
Amazing. Really amazing.
You think of the propaganda that's still going on to this day that's making the Germans out to have killed, tried to wipe out all the Jews. It's the same, similar sort of propaganda, making them out to be the nastiest of people. And yet when you hear Germans speaking today, when you hear nationalist Germans speaking today, and they're talking about what's happening to them, they're the least aggressive and racist type of sort of nationalists that there are. I've been watching some of these recent videos on Facebook where they've been interviewed after Cologne, and they're still sort of trying to make excuses for these people of what they're doing to them. You know, they have to be some of the most altruistic and generous people that there are, and yet they've been completely smeared with this holler hoax lie. And you can see that it's going on all the way back then with the Russians saying that they were cannibals. And it just shows you the way that the media has been used to manipulate people. So it's we'll talk about the ways that we're countering that when we finish this, when we talk about how we're countering that with the documentary being on American TV at the weekend. But we'll get back to this, Schmidt. You're saying that there's an autobiography of this chap, so he obviously survived the war as well. He didn't end up dying at all during the war. So what else happened to him? What happened to him at the end of the war? Do you know?
Well, yes, he surrendered to American forces in 1945. It was May, and he landed on an American-held aerodrome in Germany. And the first thing that happened was that an American soldier came up to his airplane and wanted to rob him of his decorations with a revolver in hand. So Rudel shoved him down from the airplane and shut the canopy. And fortunately, then some American officers arrived and told off this soldier. But in other places, he mentions that this happened to a lot of his comrades, that they were robbed by Americans, by regular soldiers.
Now, they used to take their watches, didn't they? You know, the Germans used to hand down a family watch from father to son that had gone on for generations, handing down the watch from father to son. And the American soldiers, the Allied soldiers, stole all these watches, which are these family heirlooms from them. So they weren't able to pass them on to the next generation. That was one thing that I remember from it, one particular thing that was stolen by the Allies, but there was a lot of looting that went on. And of course, they claimed that it was the Germans that stole all the artworks and stole all this stuff, when the Germans put the artworks away in safety so that they wouldn't get destroyed during the war. Now, the truth is completely the opposite of what we are told. So he ended up surrendering to the Americans. They didn't try taking him to court then, or taking him to Nuremberg, or they didn't accuse him of gassing Jews in Auschwitz or anything then, Schmidt?
No, he was lucky in that respect also, because he was so well known in Germany, and he was an officer, he was a colonel at the end of the war. They did treat him too well. They didn't give him the full medical attention that they could have, but he was so much more lucky than these poor German soldiers that were locked into these camps and starved to death, and as we know.
So he didn't get put in the camps then?
He was in a prisoner of war camp, but I'm guessing, or as far as I can remember, he was with fellow German officers there. And actually, if people are interested to have a look at what Rudel looked like, Just enter Hans Ulrich Rudel into YouTube, for example, and you will find some visual material, mostly of him at the end of the war with his leg already missing. But also some Wochenschau newsreel, German newsreels, will feature Rudel.
I imagine he was a very popular character at the time. I should imagine they used him a lot on the newsreels, saying, you know, look at our war hero that we've got here. Look at this brave young man, inspiring other people to fight for the cause. So you were saying that this PDF is available that people can quite easily find. That is a free PDF. Is that right, Schmidt?
Yes, if people are interested, they can just enter Stuka Pilot PDF into Google or any other search engine, I suppose, and they will find it on the first of the list that they will see.
Well, that's excellent. That's excellent. I'm very pleased you agreed to come on and tell us about him. Definitely I should be having a drink to Hans Ulrich Rudel next time that I go out.
For sure.
Definitely. Dennis, you got anything you'd like to add to that before we start talking about the TV program, or is there anything else you'd like to add, Schmidt?
No, I'm fine. Just like I said, it's amazing. I like to hear these stories, these little stories which have just been told about, you know, because you hear about more proof about them being Christian and bits of bravery that he was unaware of. Wonderful. Excellent.
It's good to hear people that have been inspired by this as well. You know, you're obviously inspired by him, Schmidt. That's why you brought it up in the chat room, saying, were we aware of these characters? And it's just such a shame that they're hidden. I say, so they don't talk about the German war heroes in Switzerland the same as they don't talk about them in Britain, even though they fill up all those lists that you were talking about. It's I'm really pleased that we're talking about him. Anyway, this bit of good news that we've got is that Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, is going to be on television on Saturday night at 11:30 p.m. on Time Warner Digital, channel 991 in Southwest Ohio. And I must admit, I was completely bowled back by this. I thought when I saw a tweet saying that it was going to be on the television, that this was just a satirical tweet. I really didn't think that it was actually going to be a fact, Dennis. I mean, this is quite amazing. This is. Do you want to let the listeners know a bit more about this?
Well, it all came about from a radio interview I did. I don't particularly want to mention the person involved, but he went to great lengths to make this happen. It took him quite some time. It was almost 12 months now. And the fact that he's managed to secure a slot on it and he's going to have a repeat viewing as well later that night as well is a major first for that documentary, because obviously the proven the banning of YouTube, like, you know, the mainstream would never really accept such a documentary. And so I'm pleased and thankful that he's put in so much effort to make it happen. And all being well, it does wear it tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, that is really good news. I think that's on public access television, isn't it?
As far as I know, yeah. I'm not too clued up about American television, how it works and what have you. But certainly the person who's doing this kind of thing, he does know about it. So I'm quite happy to let him get on with it and we'll see the results.
Well, at least it means you can say "as seen on TV" when you're advertising the DVDs.
That's right.
That's a big plus point as well. I'll just say to people, sure, if anyone wants to call in, then you can call in on Skype to radio.arian. Just send a contact request there, and you're welcome to call in. So hopefully we might hear from someone. I was really, really shocked by this. It's not the sort of thing you expect to see on the television. I mean, we've managed to clear up our space online, and people can find our blogs and the websites, and they can find the documentaries and the films. But this is the first time that I've ever heard of anything like this being on the television. And I know they do have public access, but to have this going out into people's homes is really quite something. I hope people will support it, and if there's anybody there that's in Southwest Ohio, and there's some way that if they know that their TV box is being watched to see how many people watch it, then make sure they watch it again to get the numbers up and tell people about it as well. I'd love it to be on the television over here. You know, I'm not holding my breath. not holding my breath.
Trying to convert people to think that he's really going to leave the EU, but that's another story. I don't think he'd be recommending the TV show to anybody in the near future.
And you've been looking at more of the people that promote our ideas as well this week, haven't you, Dennis? You've been looking at Michael Collins Piper. Is that who you wanted to talk about for a bit?
Yeah, this is a guy I came across a while back, just after he died, believe it or not. He died last year under some mysterious circumstances, and he had a radio show, and obviously a lot of his work is up on YouTube. I recommend anybody to go listen to him. I was amazed that it was actually, well, it could have been me speaking. His knowledge was phenomenal, and he'd written several books. One in particular was, which drew my attention this week, was The New Babylon, where he explains who exactly people are in charge of the New World Order. And I haven't read the book myself, but it just sounds incredible. It's all like the documentary I'm doing. He also makes people aware of Alex Jones, and how himself and Jordan Maxwell were saying certain things which he believed to be wrong. And he corrected them as well. He was a brilliant researcher, and I just can't praise him enough. So if anybody out there who likes my work, then they're sure to enjoy Michael Collins Piper's, for sure.
Well, this is the thing. People try to expose what's going on. They expose the crimes and what's being done to us, but then they go all shy about actually pointing out the ethnicity of the main group that are behind it. That's the problem, isn't it?
His biggest criticism of Alex Jones was the fact that, yes, he doesn't speak too much about the Jews, and yes, he doesn't hardly mention the Zionists, but he's forever mentioning the Nazis, and he goes to great length to explain just why he does this. All he's doing, he says, is he's echoing the mainstream media, because they're forever mentioning Adolf Hitler in a demonized way, and Alex Jones just echoes this to what he believes was, you know, people coming into the truth movement and listening to Alex Jones have been completely led astray. He praises certain people for their work as well, similar to his, and he actually goes on to explain about the funding, this rumour, this myth of the Rothschilds and the bankers funding Adolf Hitler. And he goes into depth there explaining why that is a myth as well. So a really interesting guy. And he did die in unbelievable circumstances. I believe the place he was staying at was burnt down, presumably accidentally, which meant they had to move into a hotel room where he was found dead. And because of his aggressive criticism of Israel and especially the neocons, many people believe that Mossad could have been involved. So whether that's true or not, you know, we'll probably never know. But certainly he carried a lot of weight with his books and his knowledge. And it wouldn't be a surprise if that was the case, because people obviously did listen to him, and it was causing great damage.
Well, this is a problem with a lot of it, isn't it? They try and blame it on the Nazis, make out that it's the Nazis that are the bad guys. But National Socialism and the Nazis and Adolf Hitler, it seems to be having a resurgence, not just among nationalists and among us waking up to this, but the general public seem to be warming to this. Just this weekend, there was a flash demonstration in Newcastle. It was a national action. They had a big banner with a picture of Adolf Hitler on it saying Hitler was right. And this is the city centre, mind you. And when they finished with their speeches, they got a massive roar of applause. And there were people there that were saying, this is really good. Some of them were saying, well, this is entertaining. They thought it was entertaining. And others were saying, well, this is excellent. This is, we want to hear this. This is free speech. Let these people have their say. So there was a hell of a lot of support for them. And I think there really is, because everyone's just sick of having all this anti-Hitler propaganda. All this holohoax propaganda, holohoax day we had this week. People are cottoning on to the fact that this is all these Jews that keep pushing this terrible World War II, these terrible Nazis. Look what they did to us poor Jews. And even people that don't know that it's all a hoax are getting sick of it, just because they're seeing it all the time, and they've realised that they're seeing it all the time on every every day on the television. There's a television show that mentions the holohoax or likens this invasion of the third world as being like the Jews trying to escape from Europe from the big bad nasty Adolf Hitler. People are realizing this, and I think we're starting to get support for us, a lot more support, Dennis.
Well, I think the ordinary person in the street must be wondering, after 70 years, why they still things about World War II. This is just the average person. So even they must be scratching their head at the fact that the Holocaust is mentioned again. And they're probably well aware themselves that, you know, there were more than just Jews dying in World War II. So that's probably one of the reasons. Another reason is obviously the internet, because without that, you know, incredibly, we would all be in the dark, I can assure you. And, you know, the fact that these people, like Michael Collins Piper, who you know, kind of says like that, without realizing the truth about Nazi Germany, we can never win the fight, because you can only win the fight with truth and not with myth. And he was certainly one of these people like who believed that, you know, the Allies were the secret enemy, should we say, to everybody in World War II. So, no, it's fascinating, and I'll certainly be looking more into him as the weeks go by.
Well, they're terrified of the truth, aren't they? That's why they've got these laws to try and stop people speaking the truth. I mean, they really are. Correct. Literally terrified of it. And the truth doesn't need laws to back it up. It stands on its own. It doesn't need to be backed up with anything. That's why just one lone man with the truth is terrifying to these people. Just one man saying something on the internet is, you know, can have them saying, shut it down, we must get rid of all of this. It's just one person speaking. So it really come to something where just, you know, words hold so much power.
The thing is, once that house of straw falls, the Holocaust, then, you know, the rest just falls like dominoes, because suddenly, you know, the world realizes that Israel has been taking everybody for a ride and been using the guilt to hammer the Palestinians with without any real criticism as such. If that house of straw falls, the Holocaust, then there's a knock-on effect, a domino effect of things, and people will realise, you know, that at the end of the day, Israel have been using the guilt, and a lot of people in the white race have been carrying this guilt around with them, and suddenly the whole world, the atmosphere of the whole world changes. So they're continuing with this. Only this week, they emphasised that they were going to train more teachers in depth on the Holocaust because they didn't feel like that they were teaching it well enough in the schools. And I'm convinced this has all come about from the internet, because certainly, you know, it doesn't take long to research on the internet to find that, you know, for the figures, some of the figures they throw out you've got to be executing 2,000 people a day, 24/7, all throughout the war. So, you know, they're making an extra effort now to ensure that this House of Straw maintains itself.
Well, they're not just saying that they're going to train extra teachers, that they've been interviewing representatives of the Hollow Hoax group, and they're saying, well, it must be taught to schools. It's already mandatory in these schools, primary and secondary school, it's already mandatory that they have specific Hollow Hoax training, and they're saying that there needs to be more of this, and that they send off certain pupils every year, they pay for them to go to Auschwitz and be brainwashed with this. And I saw David Cameron, he was talking about it in the Houses of Parliament. He was saying how he's been there. And of course, they pay to send these politicians there, and then they tell them all these horror stories. Politicians aren't the brainiest of the bunch. You know, they're not going to think, well, hang on a minute, that chimney's not attached. Well, that can't have been used with that cemetery chimney. And these politicians get taken in by this. They get brainwashed by this. And so do these kids that they send away. And one of the bits which Cameron said, I think he may have actually made a slip up here. He was talking about, he said, no matter how many books you interrogate, he meant to say how many books you read. It doesn't compare to the actual horror of being at Auschwitz. But what he said was, it doesn't matter how many books you interrogate. And I thought, well, wasn't it a book that was written that admitted that the Germans' confessions got beaten out of them by torture in the interrogation centre? So I wondered if that was a Freudian slip, where he said, it doesn't matter how many books you interrogate. Yeah. It just made me wonder that. And what he was saying is they're going to be building a huge Hollow Hoax idol right outside the Houses of Parliament. So they see that as they go in every day. And that's what this Hollow Hoax is. It's idolatry. It's a new religion with new heresy and a new idol. And the idols are the gas chambers and also these monstrosities that they build that are these monuments. They're like the idols of old, I think, Dennis.
Well, there's only another thing which sickens me just as much as some of them stories is the fact that I also watched a YouTube video yesterday of a teacher reading a nursery rhyme with two princes who ended up living happily ever after together and, you know, finally kissing each other at the end of the story. So these two combined just about made my week.
Oh, that's sickening. Well, that's like the new these comics that they've handed out to the rapeugees, trying to tell them that they shouldn't be groping women, and they've got a little cross over a picture of a rapeugee pinching a girl's backside, and then they've got a little green tick over two men kissing. So these rapeugees are going to look at that, and that's just going to make them all the worse. They're going to be sickened by the picture of the two queers kissing and think that this society needs to be taken down. It promotes sodomy. And they're going to look at the picture of them squeezing the girl's backside, and they're going to say, well, we raped them. And this is all they do. Give us comics. We'll go out and do some more of it. That's not going to do any help whatsoever. Go on.
Well, just tonight, I just saw a tweet tonight. I haven't got much details on it, but the fact was there's a 20-year-old migrant was jailed for 20 months for raping a 72 or 74-year-old lady anally. I just got the 20 months. So the world is really going crazy. I'm convinced we're living in a time where, you know, the end isn't that far away for sure.
Well, it can't be. I mean, just to add to that, why they just got 20 months, they actually gave out a directive to the German police that they were not to arrest the migrants and they were not to prosecute them for crimes because they didn't have the resources to go through with the prosecutions. So they were supposed to just let the immigrants commit their crimes. Then in Sweden, you've got an official directive saying that if immigrants commit crimes, you're not to tell the press about it. You've got to cover it up. And this has been going on for months. They've even got a special code for it. So if an immigrant commits a crime, it gets given a special code, and then the police have got to keep silent about it. So nobody can be told about it. I don't know how much longer this can go on for without people realizing that, well, hang on a minute, yes, the far right are telling the truth. They've been warning about this for years, and this is exactly what's happening. They're bringing in these creatures to replace us, and they're covering up the crimes that they commit. They're saying that we can't even report on them. And you're accused of racist if you then speak up against it. So, you know, this cannot go on for much longer. And thankfully, there are signs of an awakening all the way across Europe. There's going to be a Europe-wide Pegida demonstration fairly soon. You've got the Sons of Odin, or the Soldiers of Odin from Finland. There's various groups of them. There are various other street patrols that are being formed. And I can see these street patrols getting pretty big and having quite a presence this year. And the people are behind them. As I said, this demonstration last weekend in the middle of Newcastle, the people were behind them. Great big roars of approval they got. For Hitler was right.
I was just going to say about Trump. Trump was going to, you know, the one person over there who's on about stopping the immigration, at least till of Muslims, until, you know, we find out what's going on and who's there. And he's going to... an awful lot of stick over there, but also over here. They were trying to ban him last week, as far as I can remember.
Well, that's what the government are saying, and that's what the media are saying. But if you look in the comment sections of the media that have got this story saying ban Donald Trump, 99-1 of the comments are saying Donald Trump is the only politician that's actually speaking any sense on this subject. And when you think about what the Muslims' track record, when you think of their invasion of Europe, how jihad is the second most important commandment, how their religion says that if you don't submit to Islam, then you are at war with Islam. So anyone that says, I'm not a Muslim, Islam is at war with them. And if Islam is at war with you, then they have the right to take you as a slave, they have the right to rape you, they can murder you. And it's actually written into the religion that if they murder an unbeliever, then they are not to be taken to court for it. And this is the whole idea of Islam is to create a state that runs along Sharia law. It's got nothing to do with being part of their faith. This is what white people don't understand. They say, well, I don't want to be a part of that religion. Well, why does it bother you that I don't want to be a part of it? Why are you trying to force me to? Because I won't really believe it. But they don't care if you believe it or you don't believe it, because the whole idea of it is to have a state that follows Sharia law principles, that follows these Islamic principles. And this is why Islam itself, it doesn't mean peace. It means submitting to their idea of peace, subjection to their idea of peace. It's like another version of communism, but a religious version of communism for non-whites. So, and the actual dating that they have of Islam, it doesn't date from Muhammad's first talk with Gabriel. It doesn't date from anyone's conversion or anything like that. It dates from the time that Islam took the state over and they had an Islamic state. So the whole of Islam is based around having a state, basically, that adheres to these laws. So they don't want you to say, yes, well, I believe in it. They don't care. They want to point a sword at you until you say you're going to do as they say and you're going to go along with their laws. So it's nothing like any other religion that we have. And both these religions, Judaism and Islam, you know, they're demonic religions that are directly opposed to the white race. They've been opposed to the white race ever since their beginning. I mean, Judaism was formed in reaction against Christianity. And Islam, since it has been formed, has been all about trying to invade every country in the world and take it over. And that's what they did. And that's what the Crusades were a response to. 400 years of Islamic jihad into Europe. That's what the Crusades were about. It was a reaction to that. And they've never said, we renounce all of this, because this is the central part of Islam, is to make the rest of the world submit to it. So for David Cameron to say it's a religion of peace, when these are the central tenets of it, is insane. Well, to say they're shocked. Sorry, go on, Dennis.
No, I was just going to say Cameron knows the situation. You know, they're the vanguard at the moment of breaking up the or destroying the white European white race. He knows why they're using them.
Well, this is it. It is going to destroy our societies. There is going to be war in Germany. The women and the children are frightened to go out. They're frightened to go out on their own. They're frightened to wear the clothes that they normally wear. And this situation can't go on. I mean, once the Saxon is awakened, then the Muslims will be expelled from our lands, and there will be bloody civil war on the streets, and I'm certain that there will be common law courts set up, and traitors, you know, will get what's coming to them. As you're so fond of saying, Dennis, I'm sure that this is going to happen, unless the politicians that we do have turn around and start saying things like Donald Trump is, and start removing them.
Well, don't hold your breath.
Well, no, this is it. I won't hold my breath. And like you say, it does make you think that it's got to be near the end times, because the rest of the world has been taken over by these people. All the old white empires have been taken over by these people. We're the few ones left. But the way we should look at it is, isn't this glorious times that we live in? We've survived all this way since the first white people. We survived all this way. We are still white, and we're here at the end of it, seeing the end times, fighting against the end times. We know more than anyone has ever known before. We have more technology than anyone has ever had before. We have the ability to interact with people in ways we never had before. And we have the chance to fight against this. We've got something that is a real test of strength for us, a really character building that really will bring out the best in us, that we can show just what the white race is all about. We have a chance to really show what being white means by living in the time that we live in. And this is the way that I look at it, that it's a chance to really shine as white people in ways that white people have never had a chance to do before. We've never had Europe filled with these creatures that need repelling. We've never had such a test before.
The problem's been that we haven't realised who the real enemy was. So as long as people start working up to the real enemy, then we have a chance, because as long as you don't realise who the enemy is, you're never going to win that war.
Well, I think more and more of us are learning who the real enemy is, and especially through your work, Dennis, and through the
bunker.
Yeah, the bunker keeping shades from it. And all the other courageous people that are working to wake up our people. So my heart goes out to them, and great thanks to them, and especially the people that are in the prisons, the prisoners of war. Don't forget Joshua Bonehill, our latest prisoner of conscience, political prisoner, yeah. that is inside at this very moment, just for a cartoon picture of a Jew. I try to bring that up every time that I can. But we're reaching the end of the podcast now, Dennis. I don't know if you want to just let people know where they can find your work before we go.
Well, sure, yeah. I mean, the website, thegreatestorynevertold.tv, and Communism by the Backdoor, .tv. Also, you can find me on the YouTube Dennis Wise channel. We're up to about 14. I've possibly finished 15 for next week, let's hope so, and I'll start work on 16. So, yeah, and let's hope that the TV tomorrow is a success.
Yeah, well, and just before we go, I'll remind people that it's on Time Warner Digital Channel 991, Southwest Ohio, at 11:30 p.m. on Saturday. And I'll also just remind people that was Messerschmitt that we had on earlier. Okay, thanks, Dennis, and thank you very much, listeners. We'll be back at the same time next week for some more Truthful Out Radio.